Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And welcome to the Chronicles of Nannia, a nanny resource podcast made for nannies by me, a nanny. This is your host, Martha Tyler. And this week, we are going to be talking about nannies as educators and advocates, and advocacy about being a nanny in general. And to do that, I have brought on Nanny Tachi. Hi, Nanny Tachi.
Hello, hello. Thank you so much for having me here, Martha.
I am so excited to have you here. We were talking as we were messaging back and forth about how we've been trying to do this interview for a long time. So I'm glad we finally made it work.
Yeah, I guess it's been a couple of years, actually.
I think so. Yes. And we're both busy nannies and stuff. So I understand, but I'm so glad that we got to make it work. Before we get into the interview part, I would love to hear your nanny journey.
Absolutely. So it starts even before I knew I was going to become a nanny. So my dream, I'm actually from Brazil. And when I was 9 years old, I really wanted to come here. It was just a dream that I had as a kid. Told my dad, I want to go live in the US. And my dad, he asked me three questions. He asked me, do you speak the language? Do you have money? Then what do you have to do? So that's been my initial journey to come here, starting work early and saving money. And then at 18, So I guess that tells me, like, during my, you know, teenage years, everybody knew I wanted to come here, right? I always had that four goal that I was working to save money. And then one of my best friends, she got a flyer at her college about the au pair program, and she brought it to me. And I was like, that's it. I have the exact same, you know, amount of money that I need to go to the US to go to do this program. And at that point, I was already teaching in Brazil. And I was teaching kids as well. So like, this is perfect. This is going to be really, it's my ticket to paradise. And I came here in 2003, first as an au pair. And my host family, they invited me back. I was here for 2 years. Then I went back for a year and a half. And then I came back and they invited me back here to finish college here. And I fell in love with the profession. And here I am today, almost 20 years later.
Wow. What a wonderful nanny journey. Yeah. I love that you knew that you wanted to be here from a really young age. That's really wonderful.
Yeah, and it was really a dream of my own. Like, my whole family is still in Brazil. You know, I say, like, well, I'm here kind of alone, but it was my dream, right? And as I said, I especially talk with folks in Brazil, it's not even here. You know, nanny is not something that a lot of folks dream of being of, right? It's not a career that when they're kids, they're like, oh, I want to be a nanny. And for in the beginning of my, not beginning of my career, but when I really realized that I loved nanny more than I liked being a teacher, I went through a phase where I thought it was crazy and it was very isolating. I thought it was like this weird being that just genuinely liked being a nanny instead of being a teacher. And then I found out the community. I actually met Janice Sinclair, which I love her, and Nanny Palooza. And then I saw that there were some other crazy nannies like me that also loved being nannies. And that's really when I started my I would say my professional nanny life, I became more involved with, you know, local events and then nationally and then doing all the advocacy work and all that. So I found my tribe.
Yes. And I think that that's such an important piece in every nanny journey that I've heard. It's like that acceptance of this is a career and that it's a wonderful career. And just as admirable as teachers and, you know, like love teachers as well, but I'm the same way. I have my master's in education. I was in the classroom and I started nannying and really fell in love with it. And now that's the direction I've gone. So I think it's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, great. So let's talk about nannies as educators. Can you help me understand a little bit better what you mean by that? Of like, do you mean like educators to children like teachers are educators or educators about being a nanny as a career or both?
Both, really. I think going back to what I said when I decided to make peace with myself that that's really what I wanted to do to be a nanny, I had the realization coming out in the classroom. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to present myself as an educator because what I do, it is what I do in the, you know, in the classroom. But guess what? Here I have even the opportunity to really tailor all the learning opportunities to this child's unique needs, right? So in the classroom, even though you see what each child needs, there are 20 of them and two of you.
Right.
Possible, right? And especially with the regulations that EC has and stuff that you have to follow through the day. I was in the Head Start classroom, 20 kids for two teachers, and I was in a mixed classroom as well. So there was no way. There were some kids that were 2.9 years old, and there were some that need to be ready for kindergarten. So it was just such a different mix that when I found myself, you know, nanny, I was like, guys, this is what I'm doing. And it completely shifted the way I presented myself. And I think I really saw, I had that educator view because I was in the classroom and I was switching. And from then it really shaped how I started seeing the you know, the industry or our position as well. And I've been saying this now for over a decade, even before COVID hit. Now I feel like a lot of people and they're talking a lot more about, you know, nannies being educator because they see what happened, right, with the kids having to stay home, right. And then needing that extra help with schoolwork and all that. But the reality is we've been doing this all along. We've been doing this much, much longer than before COVID hit.
Yes, absolutely. I was literally before this interview, before we hit record, I was at the library and I was there for like 30 minutes trying to find very specific books for my nanny kids' interest. And it's so fun. I was like talking with the children's librarian, you know, all of that good stuff. And we make lesson plans and all of that. So what are some ways that you have built up yourself as an educator for your nanny kids?
That's a very good question. So some parents and even some nannies, they have the idea that for you to be a nanny educator, you need to come in with lesson plans, you need to be doing curriculum with the kids. And I, for the longest time, I still say this, it's not that I'm completely opposed to lesson plans and curriculum, but I kind of start talking about this, the magic of teachable moments, right? We don't really necessarily need to be creating lessons and having all this prepared plans to do with the kids, because the magic and I think of the really the benefit that we have to be one-on-one and have that freedom to really see what each child needs to tailor to their moods that day, to what's happening that specific day. That's really like the magic that we bring, right? And we can play with that. Yes, they're, you know, prepared sometimes activities and all. But what I really tell parents, like being able to come in, see what's going on with the kid at that moment and really tailor the day towards their needs or their interests or even their health that day or if something is going on. So it's either going to the park and then we can have a lesson there at the park. We can really explore the outdoors, nature, or if it's a hot day, we can go to the pool or we can go to the fountains. So it's not really being tied to I love routines, don't get me wrong, and I love mm-hmm. schedule. I definitely have that, but it's not being tied to, okay, we are going to have a lesson on, you know, math on Monday, Tuesday, you know, all of that stuff. So there's a lot of flexibility that I think we need to take advantage of, right? There's more exploration, especially I work with really little kids. Mm-hmm. So that's why I really sometimes advocate also for, let's leave the curriculum and lesson plans to the side, because they're going to, I always say, like, kids are going to have that putting to imposing to them for their whole lives once they start going to college, right? They're right. not really going to have a saying in what they're going to be learning or not, like what they're going to be exploring or not. So let's take that first, second, and third year if we can, and really, you know, have the adventures that we can have outdoors, have those teachable moments. So I talk a lot about teachable moments. That it is being able to create a lesson there when you see the interest. So if you're going on a walk and your toddler would stop every time to see ants, then you can talk about ants, and then you can go to the library and get more, you know, books about ants and all of this stuff, but not necessarily come with your own, you know, idea, your own concept, your own agenda, right? And put it in there to do with the kids. Now, it is different if you do see that they need to work on something. Let's say a baby that needs to work a little bit more on rolling, you know, right. and all that stuff. And of course you do it, right? Because you know. So I think that's also the beauty. Like, we have the balance. We have, you know, we have the ability to really give what they need when we see it, but we also have the ability to let them be free and explore and have the adventures. Because my ultimate goal, it is really to have that joy of curiosity. And if I keep just bringing things that I keep having my agenda of what I want to teach them, I feel that breaks a little bit. And this is just my, I guess, my opinion, right? But when I feel like it's really free and it's child-led, and I always go like through their interests and what's the, you know, in the moment that they're excited about, I do feel we have a better relationship with learning in general, right? With really exploring and not being tied to one specific or activities that I will impose to them.
Yes, I agree with you wholeheartedly in your philosophy. And I am the same way. I have been offered by families in the past, like pre-made curriculum. And I've had to really explain to those families that, yes, I totally understand the desire for wanting curriculum. Because you want to feel like your child is getting this, you know, certain education, that you're checking all of the boxes, right? There's this comfort in that of like, well, you know, this week they did math and they did science and they did, you know, and I'm like, however, what you lose by doing it that way is this ability. You know, one day one of my nanny kids and I were sitting out on the front porch, and we saw a squirrel fall out of a tree. And like, from that, we got so curious about squirrels and really studied them and got books. And, you know, there's that Sneaky Squirrel book series, and got really into that. And we would go on like squirrel walks where we would try to find, you know, see how many squirrels. So that's counting and all of this stuff. And I was like, if we had been locked into a curriculum on apples that week, you know, like there would have been no room for that curiosity that arose.
Absolutely. And I do think it's also, I think we need to work on educating parents and even some, you know, colleagues, some other nannies about how learning works, right? Learning doesn't necessarily have to work just on a curriculum or lesson plans. With kids, learning is happening every moment. And during play and the exploration, that's really, it was truly happening. We don't have to have our own agenda, because that's how their gears are, you know, like that's how they're made. And it's not like, you know, early learning, the science of learning, we always talk about, it's not that you're teaching, let's say you're reading a book and they're just learning about reading and, you know, language. There's just so much involved, like it's all interconnected, right? So they can learn about math when you're out playing with sticks. They can learn, you know, about science when you're walking in nature or, you know, playing with water. So all of this stuff, it is learning, and it's very rich learning. And as we said, the curiosity piece, it's something that I talk a lot about parents, like, you know what, I want them to explore. They're going to have this. And in the first few years, this is what is important, right? We want to work on the social, emotional, all of that. And I want them to be curious and explore. I want them to explore the world around them in, you know, different ways. And that's not necessarily just being tied to one activity that they're going to have to sit down or something that I have my on the agenda. Because if you're having a lesson plan, a true lesson plan, you have the goals, right? And it comes from you. Like, right. Even if you're talking about, but if you were the one putting, imposing that you want them to learn. So it is kind of forced. And I like to just open and let them, you know, really, every child is different, right? And also, and this is, I've talked to my students before, the frustration that comes sometimes that you have this beautiful lesson prepared and high hopes to do it. And then, you know, maybe you don't have the material that day, or maybe the child is sick, or so there's always that stuff, like that's unnecessary, because again, it takes the joy of you wanting to do some fun stuff with the kid, right? Because you get your hopes all, you know, all up. But again, it's not enjoyable. So let's just enjoy the magic that we have, that we can, you know, explore, that we can have teachable moments without having to follow a lesson plan or a curriculum.
Yes. Yes. And I think that I think what you're talking about there of like having our own plan, right, is that like pride and ego, because I fall prey to it too. And I think we see it a lot in the nanny communities, a lot in the like mom parent groups, especially of this like picture perfect, play, right. Of like, my child is doing et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I just think that the more we can resist the urge to project that our child is the smartest, the best, the whatever, or that we are, because we're doing play in this very specific way, that we're doing it the best, right? The more we can avoid that trap, the better for our kids and for us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? I have some certified genius under my belt, quote unquote, right? But some of my kids have been tested. And that's the thing, sometimes when parents, they hear or they talk to, you know, references, and they come, so they think I'm going to be that nanny that's going to come with flashcards and, you know, I'm going to be drilling them. And I always find myself having to explain to them, it's like, guess what? They turn out that way, and we never use a flashcard, and we don't do all this stuff. So, and I think that also gave me the you know, not the courage, but really be brave more into tackling this and telling people, it's like, you know, this is maybe a misconception that we have, that, you know, for your kids to be turned out super smart and all of the stuff you need to be doing. And I feel it's the opposite. I also have this theory as a learner myself, like I love learning, right? If I could go to college for the rest of my life, I would. I generally would. I love learning. I love the classroom. Yeah. And I see, so when I see folks that are so against education or so against, you know, all this stuff, I can't help but think, it's like, I don't know, 100% sure, almost, like to say that maybe it's because they had an experience, a traumatic experience, some bad experience of learning. And this is exactly what I don't want it to happen to the kids. You know, I don't want us, for example, and I can say when I noticed that I was doing that, the whole thing with, it's about the process, not the product, right? So I know that my gap, for example, I need to be very conscious when I do craft with kids, because I'm very type A and the whole mess and freezing, I know this. So whenever I do, I need to like, Tachi, chill, like, it's okay. They're going to make a mess. It's not going to be, you know, the way you think it's perfect. But that was my realization, that was like, man, if I do something here, I can completely ruin their whole experience of ever do craft again. And then I remember that actually when I was in preschool, I remember being playing with glitter and the teacher come here and kind of messed up my thing on purpose, right? I don't remember exactly what it was, but I remember being like, why did you do that? And I mean, I have the story. Yeah. but I guess I do remember some spark, but I could feel like how that, maybe that's what brought me to be the person that the glitter needs to be a certain way or so. So you can see how like little things that maybe you don't think it makes a difference, but it could actually turn you out to be a person that's going to be so, you know, kind of anal with the whole like glitter thing, right? Right. So that's why I feel like, okay, we need to just take a step back, let them explore. And if we are doing, you know, this project or any project, really, if it's arts and crafts, remember the whole thing we talk about is the process, right? Not the product. We, even if we're doing the lesson plan, it's about the enjoyment of the moment. If the child isn't enjoying, if you think that's a game and they're being forced, they're being, you know, you can't see them, like that takes the whole point away. Like they're not going to be learning. And, you know, you're really just wasting your time and their time. And if anything, it could even be, you know, kind of a bad, you know, quote unquote experience for the kid, because they're not having fun. They're not enjoying. And that's really, you know, the opposite of what I want kids to feel about learning. And as I said, the joy of curiosity.
Yes. Yes. I read this article for an article that I was writing actually about the importance of play. And the article was from Scientific America. And it concludes, and I'm quoting here, perhaps the most disturbing is the potential for early exposure to academics to psychologically damage developing brains. Yes, you read that correctly. There's evidence to indicate early exposure to academics may actually damage developing brains, not what any parent wants for their child by any means. And then it goes on to say, parents might be surprised to learn that just playing is in fact what nearly all developmental psychologists, neuroscientists, and education experts recommend for children up to age 7 as the best way to nurture kids.
Absolutely. I feel that needs to be on the billboard in every block. It needs to be everything. Like, yes, absolutely. And it is exactly there. Like I taught actually a class on play recently, and I was telling my students, even the whole sometimes when they say I feel like it's disguised when they talk about the child-based curriculum or child. I was like, uh-huh. Still, like you need to be very careful because if you have your goal and your agenda, again, you're taking the joy. You do need to follow the child. If they don't want to do it, then don't do it. Don't force it, because it's going to happen. It's going to have starting to make the association of something that I don't want to do it. Then you're forcing me to do it. And again, they're going to have this for what, 10 years of their lives, even more, mm-hmm. right? Once they start going to school, trust me, they're going to get there. They're going to get this. So there's no need for us to, you know, to force them into it early on.
Right. Okay. So I love all of that so, so much, because I am the same way. And I do feel like I have become, the more I've learned about it, the more passionate I've become about communicating that to families and other nannies and caregivers of all kinds. So how have you found, what have you found works when talking, especially with the parents that we work with, about this in particular? Because I think that there is this tendency sometimes for parents to hear it as, my nanny doesn't want a lesson plan, or my nanny doesn't want to like do the work, quote unquote. So how have you found, what have you found success in communicating with parents about why this is actually, one, more work, and two, like really important for us to nanny in this way?
Yeah. So I think making that, you know, with the joke that I always say, like, come on, they're going to have this imposed to their lives for the entire lives. Right. So I think that breaks a little bit, and there's like, oh, it kind of gives the click. I was like, oh, you're actually not wrong. This is right. going to happen to them. Right. And, you know, fortunately, I am an educator. So I come from the background, and I tell them, I was like, well, I can cite the resources. I can talk about the articles that we know, and I can explain to them that play, it happens during play, and it needs to be enjoyable and fun. And if I'm bringing here the agenda, we, you know, I just need to, well, not that I just, I'm going to go back a little bit. It's not that if I don't have a lesson plan, if I don't have this, that means that they're not learning. It's like, as you said, or as the researchers say, just playing, it's exactly what they need, right? They don't mm-hmm. need to be course and got into other way. And I tell them, I was like, you know, the first years is all about those skills that sometimes we take for granted. It's not about math and, you know, and all and reading and all that stuff. Like, it is a social emotional, it is a physical, right? It is all of that stuff together. And it's not like we're going to sit down and we're going to be doing this. And I said, science is all around us. If they have time to go and explore, if we are patient to really go and, you know, I see, and I feel you know, I can teach parents to see the science and the magic happening, you know, when they just observe the kids. It's like, you know, just look at what they're doing right now. Like, for me, I feel like I can see the baby's gears like turning when they're playing and exploring an object, right? And this is what I tell parents, like, see, we can see this. Now, put in here an activity that you think that we are doing for them and you watch. So I have done this maybe with two families, and they was like, wow, okay, it doesn't seem that they're thinking, right? I was like, yeah, well, you know, yeah. They're basically telling them what to do. And it's like, they're not having fun. They're looking, but, you know, and the parents are trying to do this. It's like, see, again, we want them to figure it out for themselves, right? Not tell them what to do, because that's how real learn happens. And that's how it's going to be enjoyable. So sometimes I have to prove a point by, you know, showing them. Mm-hmm. But as I say, most of the time, I do feel I have an advantage that I can tell about my kids that now, I mean, one of my charges is now 21 years old, right? Graduated from MIT, started Harvard at 10. So I kind of have some live testimonies that I can say that, like, listen, we never used lesson plans and flashcards, and we didn't do memorizing and drills here. So, you know, it kind of gives me like a backup, like, oh, maybe she knows what she's doing, right? So yeah, this is, you know, we need to keep educating them in the articles and showing and sometimes make the experiment with them themselves for them to see the difference, and or maybe just see how learning really happens with babies and, you know, toddlers and preschoolers.
Yes. Yes. And I think you're absolutely right. I love the showing them that when you put the learning goal on it, especially with a baby, that you can see it in their eyes that the joy a lot of times leaves when you try to force them to do something.
Yeah. Yeah. And it becomes, as I said, there's also a piece of frustration, right, from your part. And it was like, you can't control this. And I feel that that's the beauty of the work that we do. It's like, that's why I love being a nanny. I actually had the freedom to work to the individual needs of this child instead of having to impose the whole curriculum or the whole schedule that we had in the classroom.
Right. Right. Yes. And I say that on the podcast all the time of like, I think that the gift we are given as nannies that is so important is time, that we have the time, the breathing room, the ability to set up the day a lot of the time to meet the needs of the children we're working with in any season they're in, because it also is definitely a moving target.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And if they need more time, we can spend 2 hours in one activity, right? Or, you know, or maybe 15 minutes if they're really not interested, we can go and jump and do something else. So I think that's really the beauty of it. And that's what makes it even more fun.
Yes. Yes.
The Furry Princess, a tale about a princess with a tail. This children's book follows Princess Sasha, a tiger about to receive her royal tiara as she makes new friends and finds self-confidence by learning ballet. Follow Sasha on her journey to become the Furry Princess. Available for purchase at thefurryprincess.com.
So let's turn a little bit to the advocacy piece. I would love to know more about your work in advocacy for the nanny community.
Absolutely. So my work started also early, I think 2012, I guess, once I started, you know, getting to know the community, here in Massachusetts, we're just about to introduce the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights. So I was there also from the beginning. And that's when it hit me that I didn't know that we didn't have protections. I didn't know that we were excluded from, you know, labor laws in the US. So that gave me like really you know, motivation to like, no, this is not right. This is, you know, this is needs to be changed. So I got involved with a few projects. I've been still with Mata Hari. So Mata Hari Women's Workers, it's a center here in Boston, which is also an affiliate of the National Domestic Work Alliance. And since then we've been, you know, working on passing bills right now, or passing legislation and domestic workers law in several states, a few cities. And we tried 2 years ago, we introduced a federal bill because we don't really want to go, you know, all the 50 states to pass the bill. And maybe it would be easier to just go with a federal bill. So we introduced that. It's going to be reintroduced now that we changed the presidents. So in the coming months. So yeah, it's been several parts. I think as an advocate, I feel like we are definitely fighting for those rights. And I want to also fight for really the acknowledgement, right, of the work that we do, especially with so much research that we have nowadays on, you know, the importance of early childhood and who are doing those work, especially, you know, nannies that are working with the younger children. And that's how we tie, I talk about the nanny educator, like, come on, look at the work that we're doing. So I do feel like our profession in general needs to be taken seriously, needs to be acknowledged, needs to be validated and celebrated, right? And we are going to start with, you know, passing laws, giving some real protections like any other work. We are professional, we are professionals like any other professionals, right? And so we start little by little with that. Mm-hmm. it's a long road. It's not clearly, especially for me, because I like, let's get this done, people.
Right.
And especially looking for, you know, looking at domestic work, as we say in the movement, that, you know, we came from slavery and all of this stuff, like, come on, we're in 2021 and we're still having to fight for real, like, basic rights. So I know I can be a little bit impatient. And one of the things that I find also with some of the communities that I work with is that sometimes in advocacy, folks don't understand how we really need to start with the bottom line, with the basics of the basics. So for example, I'm going to give an example maybe with the Seattle case. So when they were, you know, creating, or I don't know, Seattle or California, a lot of nannies, like professional nannies, weren't happy with it. And yeah. I can see why, because, and I was like, well, you guys, sometimes what we're trying to pass here, it's really, it's very basic. And folks mm-hmm. are saying like, this is ridiculous. I mean, it's like the bar needs to be much higher. But we're forgetting that with millions and millions and millions of domestic workers here in the US, you and I, if we are in a Facebook group, we are part of the 2% of the right. of the domestic workers, right? So we do need to, you know, I need to keep working with the nannies that are around me on the day to day. It's like, we're good. Maybe we can be still be and exploited. And of course, there are still nannies that are being underpaid and all that stuff. But we are already talking to others and we have a sense, you know, we're getting some support, but there are millions of domestic workers that maybe they don't even speak a language to go and ask for help, right? Maybe they're captivated. Like we know cases, the last 2 years of folks that, you know, have taken their passports and they can't go to the playground with kids. So there's so many stuff that you would see once you start working in advocacy, that you understand why we started with really the bottom line, right? Mm-hmm. Because, well, okay, we do want to work to this and we try our best to go to a point because we know they're also going to take it out some of the stuff. It's very rarely that we're going to fight for policies, you know, at this level and then you're going to get all of it, right? Very, very rare. So it is a lot of work. I said it a lot, but there's a lot to be said about advocacy.
Yeah, for sure. What are some of those bottom line things that, because I would love for listeners to be able to start talking to other domestic workers in general about how to advocate and also just educating about what that bottom line of like basic rights is.
Yeah, I can actually talk about the controversial one. I think one of us very controversial because, you know, us, Nanny was like, oh, this is not reasonable. It's not, it was about having a break, right? So mandated break during the shift. And why did that happen, guys? It happened because, yes, there were employers that wouldn't allow a nanny to sit down, during an 8 or 10 hour shift that wouldn't allow them to, you know, really eat. So for us, this seems like it's unrealistic how it's going to happen. No, if they're going to deduct, but we have to see that there are so many that, and even myself in my career, I actually have come across people that whenever the baby was working, they would give me like a list of things to do. So it was for them to be doing nothing for a minute was like, no, even in the bathroom. I remember, oh my gosh, I have a lot of stories, but even if I went to the bathroom, I felt like I was being timed and monitored for it. So we need to remember that there, you know, not everyone and the majority of, you know, workers are not in the position that we are. And they do need this basic thing that is just saying, okay, someone's going to say, and yes, they are legally allowed to have a 30 minute break, right? And then I think the fight or the controversy came about, you know, being paid or unpaid. But you see, like I still maybe 2 years, 3 years ago, I've heard from family, they would say that they wouldn't pay me when the baby napped. And I have a great line whenever they say this and they look at me like I'm the craziest person. And I say like, oh, great. I have a friend in the area. I always wanted to go and catch up with her. This is going to be great. And then they just look at me like, what? And it was like, yeah, no, she lives. I think it's like 2 or 3 blocks from here. And it's not really true, but right. You know, I just want to see the reaction. And they would say like, what do you mean? I was like, well, you know, it's great. I'm going to have a break. You're not going to pay me so I can go grab a quick coffee and then come back. Like, oh no, you can't leave the baby alone. I was like, what do you mean? You're not going to be here for the baby. I was like, no, I need to go to work. I was like, well, then I need to be paid. So we go through this whole thing, but it kind of, for me, it's like, oh, hopefully you see how ridiculous you sound right now, right? Because right. What you're asking, it's not, that's not how it works. But it still, it happens. I've seen on Facebook posts actually recent, maybe like a week or two ago on the mom's group talking about that. And I was like, guys, come on. So it's something that we need to keep, you know, putting some regulations in there, even if it doesn't look viable for us, right? Mm-hmm. It's gonna have to be there, and it doesn't change. Like, of course, they're gonna just be paid the whole time, and that's what happens, right? Even some mandated, if you don't have the 30 minute break, they're gonna be paid. But it means that you can actually sit down if the baby's napping, and you can, I don't know, if you want to watch Netflix for 30 minutes, you watch Netflix. It's your right. break. You can do whatever you want. Yeah.
Yes, and I do think that that's so important, and it. It really boggles my mind that families can't wrap their heads around the fact that because you have to be there, the baby can wake up at any second. Like, or I've also seen posts recently about like when my nanny kids go back to school in the fall, families saying that they're going to pay less because now they're, you know, quote unquote, not in charge of as many kids. For most of the day or whatever. And I'm like, well, what happens when that kid gets sick? What happens when they're on a break from school? What happens when et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Like,
absolutely.
You should be paid for your time, for how many children you are responsible for that time.
And if you wanted the security, right? So this had happened to me actually also in a position. And I was like, well, I can't guarantee because if I do, you know, if you're cutting my pay, that means I'm going to have to find work to make it up for this. But that doesn't mean that when your kid is sick, I'm going to have, you know, go and call the other one. my other person, I can't come. It's like, you're going to pay for the availability. And, you know, usually when the times I advise nannies to find other ways that you can still be useful and you can keep, you know, giving that, that availability to the, you know, to the family, either if you're going to take maybe some house managing tasks, if you can, if all of the kids are in school, you know, they can work it out. But if not, then the family needs to know that, okay, then you do need to find someone for backup because it's not like I'm going to be able to say no to my other work just to be here whenever you can.
Right. Yes. If you want me to set aside the time for your family to be on call, then you need to pay me to be on call.
Absolutely.
In a way that is going to keep me from wanting to look for other families.
Yeah.
What are some other things that are kind of that basic? Because sometimes I do feel like most listeners to my podcast, I do think, are very, they have their finger on the pulse of the nanny world and all of that good stuff. But there are things that I know I even take for granted about, you know, my own privilege in the nanny world, and things that I just don't think about because I haven't been faced with them. So I would love some other things that seem so basic. It's like, we shouldn't have to put this in writing, but yeah, we do need to put this in writing.
Yeah, I think, well, one of the basic ones is really now that we are requiring work agreements, like it needs to mm-hmm. be stated. Here in Massachusetts, I believe our law is like, if you work 16 or more hours, you're entitled to. But some basic stuff, it's really discrimination, which is really hard to prove when you're going to somebody else's house, right? That intimate, environment, like, how are you going to prove that? How are you going to be proof, you know, of discrimination? Harassment is another one that we do need to, you know, have laws for. And even retaliation. So we are in a job that a bad review, let's say if I work for a family for 5 years and then I decide to quit and they take personal, and that can hurt me a lot, right? That right. can hurt any nanny if you then don't have that reference for the 5 years that you were working. So that's another protection that we've been fighting for, you know, especially if you speak up for, you know, to ensure that you're going for your rights, right? So like, oh, I have the right of a contract, or you've been discriminated, so an employer cannot retaliate you for speaking up. For example, time and a half was a benefit that I didn't know that I was entitled to until 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that means that through my years in college and grad school, I was working, you know, 100 hours a week, you know, on average. Wow. So it was usually like, you know, 9 to 120 hours a week, 3 jobs, because I needed to make money to pay for college and pay my bills. But if I knew that I was entitled to time and a half, I could have worked half of that and made more money, right, than what I would. So this is something that I tell them all the time. The whole thing also with, you know, me being an immigrant nanny, also going through phases where I would be really afraid of speaking up. And now we know one of the things we talk about is how labor laws will always prevail immigration laws. So you shouldn't be afraid of speaking up for your rights. So we try to educate folks on that too. So there are a lot, like, you know, guaranteed hours, right? Mm-hmm. So that's something also that folks don't talk about, and we need to do a lot of education with parents as well. There's a lot of things that we need. We really yes. need, you know, backup from, you know, policies, federal level, that to facilitate, because again, the work that we do and, you know, the service we provide is amazing. And I cannot wrap my head around that, you know, we don't have this basic labor laws to protect us.
Yes, I know. Same with me, of just like, it just feels like it, for families to like look at someone who is caring for their children and just not think that they should provide basic human rights is mind-boggling. And yet I also know that it happens all the time.
Yep. And as I said, like, we don't want to judge, you know, everybody. I do think that a lot of folks just don't know. It's that thing that's why I think it's problematic sometimes to talk about being part of the family, because it continues mm-hmm. to, you know, make them not see that this is also a person that has their own family that needs right. the protections and the benefits that you have in your job, you know, for your family. And it's not something that you're willing, you know, if you're not willing to provide that even as a family member, right? Because you think they're taken care of, but like, no, you are the employer and they are depending on you for that. So it is tricky.
Mm-hmm. It definitely, definitely is. What can listeners do if they want to, be more involved in advocacy? How can listeners get involved?
Absolutely. So one thing I want to say is just advocacy, guys. It's just as simple as maybe retweeting something, right? Mm-hmm. Or signing a petition or being involved with your, know who your reps are and give them a call and just say, hey, I'm a nanny and guess what's happening? You know, really share. They're there. They work for us. So this is something that I can't stress enough for folks to get to know their, you know, their representatives, who are they, you know, their senators, their, you know, state representatives. And talk to them about your work and what you do and what's important to you, and then be attuned about what's coming and laws that protect you. So we have, you know, if you want to join, there are several organizations. As I said, NEWA, we have over 64, over 60, I don't know if it's worth 64 right now, affiliates around the country. And it's great if you want to reach out to your affiliates and just getting to know. We have actually online getting to know your rights trainings, pretty much on a monthly basis. But they also have lots of free training for folks, even on negotiating contracts or, you know, just learning about how to be a leader in your own community. And I would say the minimum, the basic thing is really reach out to other nannies around you and see how they're doing and talk about it. Talk about the benefits. Talk about how, you know, empowering each other and to see their value and not trying to learn a bit more, because then you're going to see that there are some nannies that just don't know yet, and maybe they're afraid, and maybe they do need that little, you know, encouragement to maybe get into a better situation.
Yes. Yes. I think that part, that piece is so important of talking with other nannies. Cause I know even in, you know, my little nanny squad, we text each other and we're like, hey, like this just happened. Weird, not weird. And like, you know, just having someone like check you on like, no, that was like, you should not be treated that way. Or, you know, oh, I think maybe they meant this, like keep an eye on it and keep us posted. Things like that are so, so important. And you know, I have a nanny resource podcast and there are still times that I need someone else to tell me, no, Martha, you deserve to be treated better. Mm-hmm. So it's always good to talk with other nannies because I do think that gives us a lot of power.
Yeah. Sometimes because we're so into one situation, maybe we don't see it, right? It's easier for folks from the outside when, you know, when they see it. So for example, we have the Nanny Breakfast Club here locally where I started like 7 years ago. We're just like going for breakfast every Saturday. Mm-hmm. And we had several folks that would come in and maybe they would move from another state and they find themselves here working for $11 an hour. And they think it's great because they came from middle of nowhere, Iowa or something. I don't know. Right. But then they come here. It's like, dude, living wage here is $27. So you can definitely make more than this, but they wouldn't know unless they were talking and connecting to other nannies. But I do think there's one important thing that I'm going to say though. We also need to come from a place that we don't want to judge them. And I've seen this happen a few times where, you know, folks will blame the immigrants or whatever, that they're accepting this low paying jobs and it's making bad for everybody else. Right. That's not how you're going to help, you right. know, just judging and, you know, and blaming. Sometimes, yes, we do know there are folks that's what they need and they're going to do what they need to bring food at the table. But they need some compassion. They need some folks that are, you know, can really guide them and empower them. So sometimes it is a matter of really empowerment. Sometimes, and as we can see here, it's really much deeper than that. It's something that, you know, we might even have to get legal case involved and, you know, the police and stuff to really do a rescue instead of just saying, oh, demand more money, right? So there are different situations, and I think we do need to be generally caring and wanting to understand and compassionate about their situation to see how we can help. And just going and trying to change folks, that sometimes is not really the best approach.
Yes, I appreciate that you brought that up because I do think that I see a lot on the Facebook groups of like, just walk away or like, you know, or you deserve more than that. Like, go get it. And it's like, you don't know their story. You don't know, yeah. You know, anything about their situation. So,
and I'm guilty of that because, but I say even to my students, right, sometimes I have to tell them like, well, fortunately, I've got to a place where it is easier for me to walk away and find another position than actually have any hard conversation, which is not, I should work better on this. But again, I just feel like it's a point of privilege where I got that I don't need to stress about that. But at the same time, we do want to just, you know, understand their situation. So I do need to hold myself back and say, listen, you deserve more. And I would love to set up a plan and do something that maybe see if I can help or how I can help. Right. So this is something me as an advocate all these years, I always tell them, it's like, yes, I have a program. Yes, I have all the services that I offer, but I've never turned a nanny down if they need help. So just call me, just reach out and I will do whatever I can. I can connect you with someone. Cause I know it's not just quitting here. Right. I would never do that. I would definitely line up something first before walking away.
Right.
So it's something that we want to like, oh, you deserve better, but let's help them, right? Let's be compassionate. Let's hear first. Let's see how we can support them into if it is a situation that they need to leave. We need to be able to also help and, you know, be supportive of creating that plane, that safety net for them to, okay, if I do this, it's not just leaving a job, it's their whole life. They need to think, you know, all the pros and cons and all of this stuff. So it's not as simple as just, let's find another job.
Right. Yes. And I see this a lot in my counseling classes, because I'm in school to become a family counselor right now, of this idea of while working on this macro level of trying to change laws, trying to educate, you know, everyone at the same time, like these big things that are nationwide or worldwide, the same methods to get the word out to the masses is not how we have those individual conversations on that micro interpersonal level of like, I'm talking to another human being, honor the human being in front of you first.
Yes.
Before the agenda of kind of like what we were talking about with education of like the, you know, the child in front of you and their own curiosity is more important than the quote unquote education. And I think that when we're talking with another nanny, keeping that human being in mind first is the way to go.
Absolutely. And that's the important point too, to say that even when we are, inspiring legislations or just making like the laws, right? Passing the great power that comes from the advocacy is actually the collective. Mm-hmm. So it's not one person, it's not Tati here that's going to go and talk to her. You know, it's not just NDWA. What is an organization? Organization is made of collective stories. So it is all of us together coming with all of our stories to actually, you know, together have that power to go and fight for better, laws, for better conditions for our work. So that's why we really do need to honor, you know, individuals and the story, because the power is really me alone. I wouldn't be able to do, you know, all the things that I've done or, you know, really in several levels. Like I do need the support from either an organization, from other peers, right? From other nannies that have, you know, and organizer that came before me to do this work, to set up the place. So it's a work that we do together.
Yes. Love that. Yeah. Well, I know that we could talk about these things for hours and hours, and I'm looking forward to hopefully having you back on the podcast soon to talk about more amazing things, because I think that you're such a wealth of knowledge. So.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I appreciate, everything that you've shared with us today. And I look forward to learning more from you sometime soon.
Thank you. Thank you. It'd be an honor.
Yes. So I would love to let other nannies or listeners in general know where they can find out more about you. How can they get in touch with you and learn more about you?
Absolutely. You guys can find me on Facebook or Instagram at nannytati.com or nannytati. So that's T-H-A-T-Y for Tati. And you can go on my website, caretactics.com. It's being rebranded. Nanny Tati also works. But you find me, I am on the forums, I am on social media. And if you allow me, I will also say that I do have content in Portuguese. I started creating Portuguese content about a year ago. So for my Portuguese content, you find me at Super Nanny Tati, again, in all social media platforms.
I love that. And yes, that's so wonderful to have it available in multiple languages. That's great.
Yeah. Thank you.
Wonderful. Yes. And all of those links are down in the show notes. So do not worry if you are driving or whatever and can't go look it up right now. Awesome. Well, we end each episode with a cute, fun story, and Nanny Tachi has brought one.
All right. So I had several to think about, but I'm going to tell one that's really cute. And I guess it tells me how much I love working with kids. There was a time in my life in 2008 that I talk about, it's been probably my 2020 of most people, right? It was the worst year of my life. That's why 2020 had nothing on me. And I went through a really bad breakup and, you know, my, you know, some big loss. And I remember being so depressed and coming to work. And then my three-year-old, he had this little bunny that he would never, never sleep without. And he made me take home with me that day because he said I needed more than he did. And I was like, I can't do it. Like, I know you're not going to sleep. And he got mad at me. He was like, no, it needs to go with you. And I was just looking at the parents like, how come and I'll bring it back. And I actually brought it back. He got so mad. I was like, no, touching me. He made like a big fuss. And they actually had to drive and give me the bunny. Because he made it like I needed to sleep with the bunny. So this just tells like how amazing children are. It's just, you know, you can see how caring they are, right? How genuine, how naive. It's, I get chills every time I tell the story because it just, yeah, that's why I love my job. That's why I love working with those little human beings because they are really magical and amazing.
That is, oh, I love that story so much. Yeah. That's adorable. Thank you so much for sharing. And it really does showcase how the magic of what we do and children.
Yeah. And they know.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I remember the five-year-old even told me around that time the same thing, and it was like the breakup, and he was like, Tachi, he just doesn't know any better. Oh. Like, that's right. You're so cute.
yes. Well, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Oh, thank you. It's been my pleasure.
And thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
I love providing Chronicles of Nania to you at no cost. So if you love this podcast, please consider donating by clicking the Support the Show link in the show notes. I also totally understand if a donation isn't the way you can show your support right now. Another excellent way to support the podcast is to rate and review on Apple Podcasts. Those ratings help other nannies and caregivers around the world find Chronicles of Nania. Also, if you love the show, tell your friends. Word of mouth is so helpful to get the word out about the podcast. And truly, thank you for listening. It really means the world to me. The Chronicles of Nania is produced and hosted by Martha Tyler. Artwork by Noni Blastodon. Theme music by Brad Kemp. Find him at secondbedroomstudios.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chronicles of Nania and on Twitter at Nania Podcast. To contact us, email chroniclesofnania@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
This show has been brought to you by Machine Culture.